Reagan but stopped dwelling on it after he became such an easy and popular target. My eyes never welled up when he spoke. They narrowed. January 24th. Names from the phone book. Adonis Lubinsky, Dolly Branch, B.J. Beefus, Eugene Bratman, Wolfgang Fay, Freeman Fry. January 27th. I was in the coffee shop at the Palmer House, seated at the counter, and reached for my glasses. The guy next to me had set his glasses down as well, and when, by mistake, I picked them up, he let out a little cry and accused me of trying to steal them. The man was in his 70s, and though his glasses had plastic frames like mine and were a similar shade of brown, his were aviators. Mine was an honest mistake. I apologized, but still he called the waitress over, saying, "This guy was trying to steal from me." The waitress talked to him the way you might to a child. "Oh," she said, "I'm sure he wouldn't do a thing like that." The man, frustrated that nobody recognized the kind of person I really was, lifted his coffee cup and held it close to his chest as if I might try to swipe that, too. Just then a woman took a seat and the man turned to her and said, "Watch out, this one here just tried to steal my glasses." I glanced over to give her my "this person is crazy" look, but she was too busy locking her purse firmly between her legs. January 30th. I saw an ad in Time magazine for a CD of the biggest country hits of 1961. Songs include "Under the Influence of Love," "I Dreamed of a Hillbilly Heaven," "Po' Folks," "Beggar to a King," and "Three Hearts in a Tangle." Each of these would be a great story title. February 2nd. Because Stephanie quit, Mary was back at the IHOP tonight. She worked there for 9 years and left 3 weeks ago to manage a hotel restaurant in Evanston. She told me that she loves it but misses throwing people out and calling the police. That was always her thing. I remember nights when one out of every 4 people who walked through the door would get the bum's rush. Someone would mutter something under his breath and she would snatch the menu out of his hands and point to the door shouting, "I heard that! Out!" Not just crazy people and drunks, but men and women who never imagined themselves being thrown out of a restaurant. Tonight, the man I think of as the old Jew paid his bill and asked Mary if she was back working nights. She said yes, but just for 2 weeks. "Well, if you're free sometime, I'd like to take you out," he said. Mary put her hands on her hips. "Are you kidding? The only place I want you to go is hell, understand? You can go straight to hell." The old Jew looked down at the gum displayed in the case before him and said, "Oh, well, I guess it's just that way with some people." "Yes," Mary said, "it sure is. It's that way with me." After he left, I asked Mary why she hates him so much. He's been a regular as long as I have, 5 years now, though he's never spoken to me and just looks away when I nod hello. The old Jew eats at the IHOP every night, sometimes alone and sometimes in the company of a nurse. He's been through dozens of them, and I always figure either he doesn't pay well or they get bored. He's got to be in his late 80s, hunched over, the top of his bald head speckled with liver spots. Mary told me that he used to come in for lunch back when she worked the day shift. One afternoon, he told her that his wife had just died and that he wanted to get rid of some of her old jewelry and would love it if Mary would take some. I agreed because I know how hard that can be, getting rid of things after someone you love dies, she told me. That night she went to his apartment and noticed in the living room half a dozen candy dishes, some glass and some silver, all filled with condoms. The old Jew told her that actually his wife had died more than 8 years ago, and that he didn't have many of her belongings left. "Maybe a pair of earrings," he said, but he'd have to get in the right mood before he started looking for them. Mary said she didn't feel threatened. "I could have beaten him to death with one hand tied behind my back," she assured me. "But ever since then, I've really hated him, because sometimes that's the way it is." I was in front of the Sheridan L stop when I passed a woman cursing at oncoming cars. I'd seen her before. She looks like W.C. Fields would if he wore a red wig. Her nose is bulbous, like his, and she doesn't have any noticeable eyebrows or lashes. When a couple walked past, she said they were going home to fuck, just like all the other shitheads. I'm guessing she has Tourette's or something. I'd taught and was wearing a tie and carrying my briefcase. When I was a student, I always felt better when a teacher dressed up. It suggested that his or her job was a real one. As for the briefcase, I look at it like a safe. Students see me putting their papers into it, and it makes them feel that their stories are valuable, though it is a drag to carry. As I passed the woman in front of the L station, she said, "Oh, look at him, the little man. Thinks he's a big fucking deal because he's carrying an attaché case." I crossed the street with my head down, shattered, because she could see right through me. February 10th. Jackie Disler is a fountain of information. This morning she told me that Hungarians have the filthiest mouths in Europe, and are known to say, "Get that cock out of my face, it is covered with shit that you used to fuck Jesus." According to her, fucking Jesus is a popular insult in that part of the world. February 13th. Tonight at Barbara's bookstore, Tobias Wolff read from his memoir, This Boy's Life. All the seats were taken, so I sat on the floor in the front and tried to act normal. I was too shy to say anything when I got my book signed, afraid that if I started talking, everything inside me would just spill out. He seemed like such a kind person and wore a turtleneck, a plaid shirt, a tweed jacket, and jeans with black socks and running shoes. I have to be his biggest fan. February 14th. Barbara has begun speaking to me. She's from Tennessee, maybe 45 years old, and has worked at the IHOP the entire time I've been hanging out there. Tonight she told me that the new waitress, the black woman who started a few weeks back, has been fired for refusing to wear pantyhose. Barbara said, "And of course we have to wear pantyhose. We all do." March 4th. I read an interview with an obsessive-compulsive woman who said that before she went on medication, she spent 18 hours a day cleaning her house. After vacuuming, she would go over the carpet with tape in order to pick up dirt she might have missed. When guests visited, she'd make a mental note of everything they touched and wipe it down the moment they left. She said she'd miss important events to stay home and clean her keys or her checkbook, which how do you even do? As for keys, it would never occur to me that mine were dirty, though they probably are. Filthy, actually. March 13th. A man approached me on the Wilson L platform this morning to ask what I thought of the neighborhood. He said a woman he knew had just moved in, and he was worried about her. I didn't want to be the voice of doom and told him that nothing terrible has ever happened to me here, which is true. Then I said that I fully expected something terrible to happen, which is also the truth. Why live in a place where you expect trouble? He could have asked me that, but he didn't. I'm surprised he approached me in the first place. I look terrible lately. I reek. A few days ago, I was behind my desk at school and caught a whiff of urine. Then I realized it was me I smelled. My pants. My students must have noticed it. How could they have not? I'll have to concoct some sort of a story. I could say that I take care of a baby every Wednesday morning, and that last week it peed on me. March 20th. I read a story by a Chinese woman whose main character curses her husband by calling him a turtle and a salted egg. March 21st. Last week, a manhole cover disappeared from the alley behind my building. I guess people sell them for scrap or something. The city covered the open hole with plywood and put up a sawhorse with blinking lights, but overnight, both those things were stolen as well. When I got home from work today, somebody rang and I buzzed in a guy from the sewer department. He asked if I was the manager of the building and I said no. Then he asked about the missing manhole cover and I offered to take him out back. It was bitterly cold and the guy seemed happy to be in my warm apartment. He looked to be in his 60s, about my size, wearing a brown coat and a ski cap pulled low on his forehead. I went to put on my shoes and jacket and he said, "No rush. Take your time." We walked to the kitchen and he stopped and looked at the radiator. "You know how to keep that from hissing? You need to take yourself a skinny nail and unclog that hole right there. That's your problem. But don't do it now because you might burn yourself." "Okay," I said. "Thanks." "What you want to do is wait until later. Then take a nail, a long skinny one, and ream out that hole. That'll solve your problem. I thanked him again, and then took him to the alley, where we saw that the manhole cover had been replaced. While standing there, looking at it, I learned that getting a new one had been the landlord's responsibility. "I love to catch people stealing them," the man said. "You can get sent to prison for taking one of these babies." He could have walked around the corner to get back to his truck, but instead he followed me into the apartment. In the living room, he paused to look at some drawings. "Did you do these?" he asked. "What are you, some kind of a drawer?" He bent forward and chuckled. "Man, oh man, these are great." I always offer coffee to people working in my home. The guy who fixed the stove, an electrician, the cops who came once, everyone. I offer, and they decline. I had a feeling this guy would have said yes and then stayed until 5 o'clock or whatever was quitting time for him. Since he wasn't working in my home, I didn't offer him any, but now I wish that I had. I liked him. March 23rd. The president of the NRA was on the radio today, speaking before the Commonwealth Club of California. I was working at Linda's, refinishing her banister, and when she came in, we listened together. The guy started defending the sale of assault rifles. "It's not the guns that are the problem," he said, "but the birds who use them. These birds who are psychos and should be locked up in the nut house. These birds who break into houses and try to rape people." The guy was very folksy. "Just like my dad," Linda said. "That could be him on the radio." Her father is a farmer and she grew up with guns. As a child, she shot a robin. Shocked at what she'd done, she tried to set it back in the tree, thinking it might spring to life once it was returned to its rightful place. The head of the NRA kept using the term birds. He said that sportsmen across the country enjoyed the responsible use of assault rifles, and that a few sicko nut birds shouldn't ruin it for the rest of us. He wasn't particularly articulate, but he believed in his cause and didn't evade questions the way so many speakers before the Commonwealth Club do. March 26th. Walking to the L, I passed two men on Leland, both of them fully grown. One of them asked for a cigarette, and the other, not hearing my answer, grabbed my arm. "I said we want a cigarette," he shouted. "You can't go around grabbing people like that. I'm sick of how trashy it is here. It's filthy and depressing, and every day it gets worse due to the warm weather. Living in Uptown, I get the idea that people are basically stupid, cruel, and violent. The lease runs out at the end of April, and I think I'm ready to move." In other news, I heard that a man's waist should be twice as thick as his neck. March 31st. The blind man was at the IHOP tonight, eating dinner with a sighted companion who brought up a friend of his who had hoped to open a combination cafe, theater, and the Loop and offer light meals and plays during the lunch hour. "Of course you'd have your soup of the day and your salads and so on," he said. "I'm talking sandwiches and so forth." The blind man nodded. "But it turned out he didn't go through with it," the sighted man said. "Apparently the friend didn't have enough money." So I said to him, "Well, money's not everything." Then he said, "Maybe not, but it's about 10,000 goddamn miles ahead of whatever it is that comes in second." He sighed, then stole a French fry off the blind man's plate. I graded Elle's paper today. She's always late to class, then settles herself in and starts eating a snack. She likes potato chips in cellophane bags. Then she'll decide to clean out her purse, taking out papers and crumpling them up. A couple of times I've turned to her saying, "Are we all done now? Got everything squared away?" Then she'll say either yes or almost. Sarcasm is lost on her. Elle's story was among the worst things I've ever read in my life. How on earth did they allow her to graduate from high school? Even Tomoko, who is from Japan and can just barely speak English, is a better writer. Plus, Tomoko is spirited and she tries, unlike Elle, who just snacks and cleans out her purse. April 12th. Money. $33 from Lower Links Reading. $50 honorarium from Randolph Street Gallery. $83 total. April 18th. This evening I feel fat, stupid, and ugly. I was a lousy teacher again today, completely incapable of holding an opinion. I'll make a statement, then at the slightest resistance, I'll retract it. How can they respect me? There are several students in the class whom I don't like. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I just don't like them. Can they tell? April 21st. At the market underneath the Wilson L, I pulled the shopping list out of my pocket. Just as I realized there'd been money in there, too, and that I'd dropped it, I turned to see a man swoop down and pick it up off the floor. He had sand-colored hair and a red, boozy face, cross-hatched with wrinkles. I told him politely that that was my dollar he'd just picked up, and he said, "What dollar? I didn't pick anything up." "Yes, you did. I saw you." "You didn't see nothing," he told me. I followed him to the back of the store where he grabbed a quart of beer and a bottle of Four Roses. "Come on," I said. "I saw you take my money. Give it back." This guy was in his late 40s at least, way old enough to know better. If I saw a dollar bill fall from someone's pocket, I'd say, "Excuse me, you dropped something." If there was no one around, I'd claim it as my own, but this was different. At the register, the man untwisted my dollar. Then he took all the change out of his pocket and slowly counted it out. When the cashier told him he was short 10 cents, he turned to me and said, "Give me a dime." I couldn't believe it. There were two men behind me in line. One of them rooted in his pocket and handed the man who'd stolen from me 2 nickels. Then he looked at me with mild disgust, the way you might at a skinflint, and said, "What's a dime?" May 5th. I really need to avoid red wine. I drank it last night at Robin Lynn's house and awoke hours later with a terrible fire in my throat. My uvula felt like a pilot light. When I got up this morning, my face was very white. I feel fragile today, but don't have what I'd define as a hangover. I remember what went on last night. At one point, Rob showed me his computer and explained that you can plug one into a telephone jack. On Tuesday, I handed back 17 papers I'd gotten from the beginning class, including one from L. It's about a little girl who gets out of bed on Christmas Eve to spy on Santa. She never sees him, but gets a shiny new bike the next morning. The final line is, "I knew that this was going to be a very special Christmas." It was something a fifth grader might write, and it made me sad that I was reading it. Her other story, The New Me, was about a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. I was talking about it to Sandy in the teacher's lounge, and she told me she'd gotten the exact same story from someone else last semester. I looked in the right-hand corner of the title page and saw that L had just whited over this other idiot's name and then typed in her own. When I confronted her later in the day, she said, "Look, just tell me, am I going to pass the class or not?" May 6th. Man ordering at Butera's deli counter. "Hey, give me one of them chickens what spins around." May 9th. This morning I made a list of chores that might lift my spirits. 1. Lose 10 pounds. 2. Rewrite the last 2 stories so I can start something new. 3. Paint a picture of a mole. 4. Make myself go out when I don't want to. Again this year I made Mom a Mother's Day card. It reads, "M is for the morbid things you showed me. O is for the other things you did. T is for the $1,000 you owe me. H is for the things you found I hid. E is for the error of my caring. R is for the ranch house you call home. Mother dear, I wish that you had shown me how to shave and how to use a comb." May 28th. I have seen 2 fistfights this weekend. One was across the street from Steve Lafreniere's, where 2 men confronted a skinny guy they'd seen beating a woman. "You ain't supposed to hit girls, you stupid fuck, you asshole," they said as they punched him. Later on Beacon, I passed 2 men fighting over a small bicycle, just pounding on each other. June 21st. Since moving further north, I've been taking the bus to the IHOP. On the way home tonight, I sat across from a woman with teardrops tattooed on her face. She had a bad complexion and hard features, made all the more jarring by her outfit. A skirt and blouse, the blouse one of those high-collared ones with ruffles that a conservative lady might wear. The skirt was cream-colored. From my distance, I could see that the clothes were cheap. I'd seen this woman before, but never sober. After a few blocks, a man boarded. All the teeth on the right side of his mouth were missing. And when he saw the woman, he said, "Doris!" He commented on her clothing and said that it was fancy. "Yeah," she said. "I decided to wear a dress for once in my life. Wonders never cease, do they, Roy?" She raised her hand to swipe away her bangs, and I saw that there was a tattoo on her forehead as well. July 4th. While on my bike, I passed a woman walking with two young children. The little girl had a plastic six-pack ring wrapped around one of her feet, and her mother, noticing it, shouted, "What the fuck are you doing, bitch?" July 20th. There was a shooting in Amy's neighborhood last night. She and her boyfriend Paul heard the shots from their living room and figured they were firecrackers until they saw a crowd gathered in front of the house across the street. The man who lives there is very ugly and is missing a hand. In its place, he wears not a hook, but a pincer that starts at the elbow and is sort of like a crab claw. 8 police cars came. Officers led the man out of the house and started to cuff him, but then they noticed his pincer, at which point they took him by the arm and locked him in the paddy wagon. On All My Children, Erica is being stalked by a dwarf. For a long time, they just showed a hand that would draft ugly letters to her and turn off the local news whenever she appeared. I get the feeling I'm supposed to know who this person is, but I've been watching regularly for only 4 years, so I'm at a loss. Meanwhile, on One Life to Live, Vicky has been shot in the stomach. Megan watched it happen and hasn't made a sound since. I'll bet anything she inherited Vicky's multiple personality disorder. July 21st. I was right about Megan. Vicky's shooting triggered her latent inherited multiple personality disorder and turned her into someone named Ruby Bright, who likes gambling and speaks with a Brooklyn accent. July 25th. Amy gave me her old toaster, which I put in the pantry, and forgot about until last night at 2 a.m. I'd already had dinner and plenty of it, but still I made 2 peanut butter sandwiches with canned peaches on top of them. I don't eat like this when there's no pot in the house, but now I'm back to sucking up everything in my path. Peanut butter and peaches? Since when do those two things go together? July 30th. I was standing on Clark Street when an elderly woman approached, riding one of those electric carts people take to when they're not quite crippled enough for a wheelchair. "Out of my way, asshole," she said. I moved to the side, and after driving a couple of feet past me, she chained her little chariot to a parking meter and hobbled into the restaurant I had just walked out of. July 31st. Jewel is having a sale on chickens, 49 cents a pound. So I bought several and stood in line reading an article in New Woman titled "Infidelity, How to Keep Your Man from Straying." It included several warning signs, as you need to know when your boyfriend or husband is feeling insecure and neglected. You need to take notice when he loses interest in sex, and you have to fight, fight, fight to win him back. The article suggested that a man's infidelity is always the wife or girlfriend's fault. It never considers that maybe he's just an asshole. August 7th. Anatole Breuillard on Jane and Paul Bowles in this week's New York Times Book Review. Their marriage was so open it yawned. The blind fellow was at the IHOP last night with his father, and I listened as they discussed geography, particularly the states that make up the Great Plains, the Sun Belt, and the original 13 colonies. Then he asked his dad about New York City, saying he'd heard they have no alleys there and that the people are rude. "Rudest sons of bitches on the face of the earth," his father said. "It's crammed full of rude people and rich foreigners, Jews, Arabs, Japs, and they make it so you can't afford to shit." The blind guy has a small voice and is very polite. His eyes are in the far corners of their sockets. Last night I noticed a lot of food stains on his shirt. The blind guy's father, when talking about New York, reached behind himself and used his knife to scratch his back. August 9th. I was at the Roseland bike shop, waiting for them to repair my handlebars when a woman came in. Behind her were two children, a 10-year-old boy, blonde with a dirty face, and a teenage girl riding a small pink one-speed. Earlier, apparently, the mother had spoken to the owner, Ken, about his buying it. He'd offered a low price, so the mother and her two children had walked down Broadway looking for a better one. Now they were back.
"I just got that bike last Christmas," the woman said.
"No way," Ken told her. "That's at least 7 years old. It has a banana seat, for Christ's sake. They don't even sell those anymore."
"Last Christmas," the woman repeated.
She had shoulder-length yellow hair and wore a sweatshirt with "Damn, I'm good" written on it.
"I saved and saved to buy her that bicycle. I got it at Woolworth's. You can check with them. I got the papers somewhere at home, but it'll have to root around to find them." She wiped her mouth with her hand. "I'm a poor woman, Ken."
"Oh, Mom, shut up," her daughter said. "Please shut up."
"I got me 13 children, 11 of them living, and 7 grandchildren."
She looked to be around 40, a very hard 40, but I didn't doubt the 13 kids. The daughter took off down the street then, and her mother called after her,
"Bonnie! Bonnie, you better get back here."
She wiped her mouth again.
"Don't mind her, Ken. She just thinks you don't want to buy her bike."
She turned back in the direction of her daughter.
"Bonnie, you better get back here before I slap the shit out of you."
August 11th. I was at the liquor store, buying a bottle of Canadian Club as a thank you gift, when a drunk man approached and told me not to be frightened. He was absolutely hammered, this guy, and said he wanted me to buy him some potato chips, the kind in the large portion bag, big grabs, they're called. I brushed him off, and when I got to the register, out of nowhere, he laid the chips on the counter beside my bottle of Canadian Club. The cashier saw what was going on and snatched the bag away. Then he pointed to the door and shouted, "Outta here, you!" When I stepped outside after paying, the drunk was waiting for me. He was very angry and got up in my face demanding that I give him money. I handed him a quarter and he said,
"A dollar and a quarter."
I needed to unlock my bike, so I was in a bind. Drunk or not, this guy had clearly been in a lot more fights than I had. I didn't want to give him a dollar because by this point I hated him, and it was more like getting robbed than doing someone a favor. Luckily, just then a friend of his walked up and said, "What are you doing? Begging for money again, Ronald? Begging? Dogs beg, man." This gave me a chance to unlock my bike and ride away. August 21st, Emerald Isle. I was up by 8:30 this morning, and we were all out on the beach an hour later, Mom, Amy, Tiffany, and me. Mom was in a terrific mood and talked about her father, who was an alcoholic but a cheery one. Whenever Mom or Aunt Joyce came home late with friends, he'd get out of bed and cook for everyone, make spaghetti sauce, pies, anything anyone wanted. He'd fill the tub with water and let ducklings splash around in it. As a teenager, Mom was allowed 2 sweaters per winter, but she sweat so badly that they were ruined in no time. August 27th, Raleigh. I rode home from the beach with S, and on the way we stopped at Pappy's Army Surplus. One of the T-shirts they're selling pictures a handgun and the words, "Smith and Wesson, the best in feminine protection." While looking around, I learned that last Christmas, S's sister-in-law sent her a half-eaten box of candy. The year before that, she gave her a broken jewelry box made of stained glass. September 22nd, Chicago. I went to Barbara's bookstore to hear Russell Banks talk about his new novel, Affliction. I'd read Continental Drift, Searching for Survivors, Success Stories, Trailer Park, and The New World, and liked them all. He wore tan-colored slacks, a striped shirt, a sport coat, and loafers, and read for 20 minutes. Afterward, I bought the book and stood to get it signed. The first woman in line told Russell Banks that she tried to get his phone number from Richard Ford's wife, but since Ford's wife couldn't find it, she'd decided to come in person and give him a list of questions she would like answered. The man behind her went into a lengthy explanation of why he himself writes and was very particular about the inscription he wanted. I was next in line, and just as I opened my mouth, a woman appeared with a paperback copy of Continental Drift and said, "Excuse me, hi. It says on the back that this is a novel about American life. Is that true?" He said politely that it was not a novel about all of American life, but sure, it had Americans in it. I never know what to say when I'm getting a book signed. September 26th. I asked my beginning writing students to compose fan letters, and today we read them out loud in class. Most were sincere in the way I'd hoped they'd be, but one kid's amounted to hate mail and was addressed to his mother. He wrote about being shit out of her cunt. Then he reminded her that he was not her fucking boyfriend, and on and on. Afterward, no one knew what to say. My fan letter was to Joy Williams. September 27th. Ted called last night. "All my life I've been looking for Mr. Wright, and here I've wound up with Mr. Wong," he said, referring to his new boyfriend, James Wong, who is from Hong Kong. Ted's sister, meanwhile, has started playing guitar and singing gospel songs, mainly in malls. October 10th. I worked 4 different jobs this week, school, Betty, Evelyn, and Shirley, and during the last 3 of them, I fantasized about moving to New York and living in the apartment of that drug dealer I visited last June. It wasn't huge, just a 1-bedroom on the 3rd floor facing the street. In my fantasy, people come to visit me, but I don't have time to see them because I'm so busy. Because of the book I've had published, I am often recognized when I go out. I am very trim, and lots of people call me. I don't know how I'd ever get the drug dealer's apartment, or, more important, the book. There's still a lot to work out. October 24th. Today in class, I wrote "Spotlight on Love" on the blackboard. Then I drew a spotlight aimed at the words to show that I meant business. "Today, I'd like us to talk about breakups," I said, rightly figuring that everyone had a story to tell. E started off by talking about his hometown girlfriend, who he'd just learned had been cheating on him. "That's because she's trash," I said, trying to make him feel better. "She's a liar and a skunk, and this is how she gets attention." I said that what goes around comes around, and in time, the guy she was seeing now would be cheating on her, just like she cheated on E. He was glad to hear it. Next came M and A, who both had good stories. Then it was J's turn, and she ran out of the room crying. K, a young woman who is always tardy and wears a lot of makeup, said that she's not currently involved with anyone, but is pursuing a guy who is already in a relationship. Boo, hussy, troublemaker. No one came out and said this, but our attitudes conveyed it. I love teaching college lately. October 29th. Mom arrived for a visit yesterday, and we went from the airport to the Palmer House, where we had a cup of coffee. We walked around, we went to Amy's, we took naps, and today we're going shopping. I was on the L reading a book when someone said, "Sir?" I looked up to see the most terribly disfigured person imaginable. He took my breath away. A black man who'd been horribly burned. His head looked like a candle in the shape of a head. The skin slick and dripping down like wax. He was missing both his hands, and there was a can attached to his bandaged stumps. Taped to it was a sign reading, "Need money for operation." Man, it scared the life out of me. November 1st. Mom left today at 4. She was a big hit with my beginning students. I brought her in for my Ask a Mother segment, and she was fantastic and answered everyone's questions with wisdom and humor. Last night we went to Eli's for steaks. I was wearing a tie but not a jacket, so I had to wear one the restaurant provided that was way too big for me. November 2nd. Paul enrolled in a technical college in Durham and has been assigned an English paper in which he needs to compare and contrast 2 things. The teacher said it might be good to compare the people of Raleigh to those who live in Durham. In this town, folks are curious and will allow you to merge into their lane, while in Raleigh, they're all too busy and stuck up, she said. Paul is thinking that for his paper, he'd like to compare mushrooms to acid. November 21st. I've been offered a chance to teach summer school. The class lasts 3 weeks and pays $2,400. It's 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, and I could use the money to move to New York. December 21st. On the last day of class, I took my students to the Walnut Room, where we sat by the big Christmas tree and had cocktails. Everything on the menu had a festive name. One item in particular was called something like God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen California Blush Wine. Afterward, I went with Ben and his mother to the Wagon Wheel restaurant, where the two of them ate bacon cheeseburgers. His mom could be 50, but looks younger. She wore a knit bonnet, and through it I could see gray hair, but couldn't determine how much of it she had. This was a 10-year anniversary of her divorce. At first, she thought she'd order the pancakes and have a beer to go with them. Then she changed her mind and went with the bacon cheeseburger, deciding that instead of beer, she'd have coffee. Ben's mother works at B. Dalton and earns $75 a week. I liked her a lot. January 1st, Raleigh. At midnight, Gretchen and I were driving down Glenwood Avenue. Someone honked his horn for no reason, and I looked at my watch and realized it was the new year. A new decade, even. One I am entering with an electric typewriter, Christmas present from Mom. Everyone says, thank God the 80s are over, and I wonder if they say that about every decade. This afternoon I worked on the Clark Avenue rental property with Paul. Last week, during the cold snap, Dad set up a kerosene heater that covered everything with soot. The former tenant had left the freezer door open, so it's black in there as well. Paul and I spent the day washing everything down, and then Dad drove over, and the three of us painted while listening to the Foxy 107 countdown. Everyone in our family listens to black music. Everyone, all the time. January 4th. Mom reads her horoscope daily. Sometimes in two or three different places. It's something she started doing a few years back, and while I don't believe in astrology, still I find myself falling for it. This morning she told me that an older person will be giving me something in return for a favor, and that the gift has the potential to change my life. Dad is the only older person I know who owes me a favor. Paul and I painted that apartment he owns for free. So I waited for him to give me something. When it became clear that that wasn't going to happen on its own, I asked him to give me something. We were in the kitchen and he said, all right, hold on, I've got something for you. He went into the basement and returned a few minutes later with a box of S&H green stamps. Some were pasted into books and some were loose. This was a box he'd brought with him when we moved from Raleigh to Binghamton in 1964. I didn't think anyone honored green stamps anymore, but Dad says they're still redeemable in Florida. How will these change my life? I asked. Well, I guess that's up to you, he said. January 23rd, Chicago. According to the mother of one of my new students, women whose last names end in the letter A tend to have larger breasts than women whose names end in any other letter. The student, Lisa, had her arms crossed when she said this. January 29th. I'm trying to replace the kitchen faucet for Shirley's tenants and wound up going to the hardware store with a guy named Jack, a carpenter, who'd come to give an estimate on the new closets. He's been married 3 times. His first wife left when their youngest son was only 2 years old. I asked why she left, and Jack said she'd fallen in love with some hillbilly's dick. He said, fuck it. I don't give a damn what that bitch does. Who needs her? He told me that she stayed away for 3 years before coming back to check on the kids. When Jack's first mother-in-law died, his reaction was, then fucking bury the bitch. He started drinking heavily when married to his second wife, who was as bad as the first. Now, with the third, he's been sober for 5 years. The two of them take nice vacations and went to Hawaii once, where whores charge $200 just for a fucking blowjob. Jack uses the word tits to mean great. The hotel in Hawaii was tits. That red Camaro is tits. Replacing the valves beneath the sink was not tits. I stood and looked down at him on his back, his big belly exposed, while he cursed. In his own way, he's a nice-looking man. In the late afternoon, we made a second trip to the hardware store. Jack honked at shapely women as we passed them. "Hey," he'd yell. "Turn around, you stuck-up bitch." He wasn't what you'd call the silent type, not at all. And he charges $20 an hour. February 6th. I asked my students if any of them had stolen anything lately, and two raised their hands. R said he'd taken a sweatshirt at a party because he was cold. A few days later, its rightful owner, a young woman, confronted him, and he ignored her. She was rich and could buy herself another one, he said. There are a couple of students this semester I have a real hard time liking. February 10th. I went to bed at 3:30 last night and had just lain down when I heard a woman yell, "Somebody help me! My God, help me!" I couldn't see people out on the street, but I could hear them, so I called the police and opened the window, at which point I could make out two shapes. The man kept trying to yank the woman upstairs. She would say no, and after he hit her, she'd scream for help again. Then he told her to suck his dick and gave her what sounded like a real wallop. When I heard her being slammed against the chain-link fence, I stuck my head out the window and told him to leave her alone. "I called the police," I yelled. "I called them and they're on their way." He must have heard me, but he didn't stop. Just as I started looking for the baseball bat I don't have, that and my missing courage, the cops came and flung open the doors of their squad car. I heard them call the man a son of a bitch and a motherfucker. They said, "You get your kicks from beating up women, asshole?" The guy yelled that he wasn't doing anything wrong, and the cops told him to shut up. They handcuffed him, and then they talked to the woman, who wasn't sure she wanted to press charges. Two more police cars came, and a few minutes later, they took the guy away. February 19th. I spent all day waiting on Cool T, who was supposed to deliver a bag of pot at 1 this afternoon and finally got it to me at 9:30 tonight. First, his car broke down on the expressway, and then his initial connection fell through. At 9, I went over to his place, then he, me, his wife, and their 2-year-old daughter drove across town to some other connection's apartment. It made me crazy to be inside all day. For a long time I read, then I graded student papers and wrote to a kid I'd had last semester who has since left town and wanted my opinion on a story he'd just finished. It was about his dog, Tipsy, having puppies. At around 5, I called the mother of the deaf child whose birthday party I was supposed to go to. Then I talked to Lisa and Mom and Amy. Mom told me that Tiffany is dating a mailman, and Amy and I made plans to send her postcards reading, "The tests came back positive," and "I need that $10,000 you owe me." At around 7, I watched part of a TV show where a kid with Down syndrome sang "Fight the Power" for his high school talent show. On the radio, I learned that Keith Haring died of AIDS. I really felt like I was in prison yesterday. February 27th. It looks like I've got a place to live in New York. It belongs to Rusty Kane, a 2-bedroom in the West Village. The couple he's been subletting to is moving out, so he's moving back in and has asked if I'd like to be his roommate. My half of the rent would be $400, which isn't much more than I'm paying here, plus the utilities are included. New York. Finally. Or almost. I think I can make it by August or September. March 3rd. I hailed a cab at 4:30 this morning and got a driver with straw-colored hair. After I got in, he met my eyes in the rearview mirror and said, "Did you see any pussy out there tonight?" I told him I hadn't been looking, so some might have slipped by unnoticed. "You can usually see pussy further south on Montrose," he said. "A lot of that is sick pussy. Of course, it's a little cold out there tonight. Cold and
late. A lot of that pussy is home now, home asleep.
I'm often talked to like this by taxi drivers, and it makes me think their cabs should be a different color than the others. That way women will know to avoid them. It gives me the creeps that this guy might pick up my sister. Then again, if anyone could destroy him, it would be Amy.
March 22nd. I taught today. Sometimes I go in with no idea of what to do. I have them write in class, and then I go to the stairwell to smoke and try to think of something. Today I told my students about a friend of mine who is going through a breakup. "What do you do when you're trying to get over someone?" I asked. They gave me the best advice.
April 1st. Last night I watched the last half of A Patch of Blue on TV. I hadn't seen it in ages, and couldn't help but wish that Sidney Poitier were my boyfriend. He's so handsome and has such a great voice. At the end of the movie, Selena says that she knows he's colored and that it makes no difference to her. He has arranged for her to attend a school for the blind, and just as the bus arrives to take her away, she announces that she loves him. He feels the same, I can tell, but needs to do what's best for her. At the end, when he heads alone up the stairs to his apartment, I cried. I'd been wanting to do that all day, had tried most of the afternoon. "Boo-hoo," I'd said, lying in a fetal position on my bed. I'd hoped it might trigger something, but it felt artificial. And so it was great to happen upon A Patch of Blue. I was crying more for myself than for the movie, but that's how it usually goes. I cried hard. I sobbed. I went to the bathroom mirror, watched myself cry, and cried even harder.
"I loved you," I said to my reflection.
I wished then that someone would call me so I could answer in my weary, broken voice.
"Wrong," I'd say. "There's nothing wrong on my end. Why do you ask?"
April 6th. Sarah Vaughan died 3 days ago. I have always loved her. April 13th. I told the beginning students that it's a tradition for the class to buy the teacher a gift at the end of the school year. Then I said I've had my eye on a watch that costs $160. "That's only $14 each," I told them. After describing it in detail, I told them where it could be found. The end of the semester is approaching, so I'll make it a point to mention this again over the coming weeks. I want that watch. I must have it. April 16th. On Greek Easter, I drank scotch, followed by retsina, followed by ouzo, followed by scotch, followed by brandy, and today I feel like I've been raked over by an acetylene torch. April 18th. Again in class, we talked about love. A's fiancé just slept with her best friend, and she's written them both off. D was beaten by her boyfriend twice before she left. R confessed to hitting his girlfriend so hard he knocked her out. Two students are married. Two are engaged. Three have mothers who have been married three times. One has children. Three are heartbroken. Three others can have sex tonight if they make a few phone calls and beg. April 25th. Amy and I decided a few years back to call ourselves the Talent Family. In the fake bio I'm constructing for us, I claim that two of our earlier plays were A Testament to Tansbury and Cassandra, albeit Cassandra. May 6th. A bumper sticker I saw on a beat-up car. "This ain't the Mayflower, but your daughter sure came across on it." A man at the IHOP tonight lifted his entire steak with his fork and held it before his mouth, chewing off hunks of it. May 20th. Mom called to tell me that, according to my horoscope in the Raleigh News and Observer, in 2 weeks I'll get exactly what I've been striving for. That's 2 weeks from yesterday, meaning June 2nd. She sounded excited, so I got excited as well. Why do I always fall for this? May 21st. Amy and I were leaving the Century Mall when a guy approached and asked if we'd take part in a survey for a new candy. We answered two simple questions and thought we were through, but then he led us downstairs to a basement where we were shown a mock-up of the product and interrogated for what felt like hours. The guy who took down my answers had frizzy hair to his shoulders and skin that was too white, even for a white person. He wore a blue cotton lab coat and laughed nervously after everything he said. He was really a mess. This was a marketing test for a light candy bar called Forever Yours. The pale guy told me it contained NutraSweet and was only 120 calories. One of the questions he asked was, "Do you think this product fulfills a continental heritage?" I was like, "Huh?" Next he asked if I thought it had a traditional American flavor. I said I couldn't eat chocolate, but that didn't matter, as they never offered us a taste of anything. Eventually, I said that the whole idea was stupid. If you're worried about calories, then don't eat a candy bar or eat only half of one. "Everything's light now," I said, "and the letters that spell it out are always yellow so our eyes won't get fat looking at the label." He asked what I thought of the name Forever Yours, and I said that it was silly, because it's not forever yours. You'll eat it, then later in the day you'll pass it, and the experience will be over. It has a beginning and an end. There's nothing timeless about it. The guy then asked if I was married, single, or divorced. This was perhaps his way of gauging how jaded I am regarding the word forever. May 25th. Catherine Ann Porter's collected letters has been released, and the Times Review included one she wrote to Hart Crane. "Your emotional hysteria is not impressive except possibly to those little hangers-on of literature who feel your tantrums are a mark of genius. To me, they do not add the least value to your poetry and take away my last shadow of a wish to ever see you again. Let me alone. This disgusting episode has already gone too far." Ouch. June 4th. Amy's neighbors were kicking a ball on the front yard her boyfriend Paul had recently seeded, so she opened the window and politely asked them to play somewhere else. "We're trying to grow grass," she explained. "You're trying to grow it now?" one of the kids asked, as if she could put it on hold for a while. June 18th. Summer school started this afternoon. They said they'd cancel the class if I had fewer than 12 students, then they changed it to 7. I started the day with 8. One was absent, 2 added at the last minute, and 1 dropped out, so now I'm at a relatively safe 9. That'll be $2,300, $1,900 or so after taxes. I can add to the $1,000 I have already saved for New York. June 26th. Amy and I went to Hofritz to find Dad a Father's Day gift. Our original idea was to buy him a knife, but in the end we spent $72 on a vibrator. It's a Panasonic with a long stem and a thickish disc on top, designed so you can reach behind yourself and work out the kinks in your back and shoulders. We also figure he'll use it on his dog. "Our father is going to love this," Amy said to the saleswoman as we laid the vibrator on the counter. The woman smiled. "The next time we see him, though, I bet his front teeth are all chipped." The smile faded. June 28th. A few days back at the library, I found the new biography of Jackson Pollock, who was surprisingly naive. On the advice of a Park Avenue healer, he started drinking a combination of bat shit and ground beets, this to establish a proper balance of gold and silver in his urine. In 1951, the doctor put him on a special diet for his alcoholism. No dairy and plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. The only meat permitted was fowl, which had to have been shot within the past 2 hours and had to be wild. Eat no bird that can't take off at 50 miles per hour. Meanwhile, he could still drink as much alcohol as he wanted. The trick, the doctor explained, was to balance out the metals in his body. Jean Detzer came by the other night, and she and Evelyn swapped stories about the Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the time they'd spent working there as meeting planners. American hotels have a rule that you can't display a cadaver in any room where food is being served. "How archaic," Jean said. "I mean, really, in this day and age." Perhaps the rule had something to do with wakes, but for whatever reason, it was instituted, and both Jean and Evelyn have broken it. Evelyn once traveled with half a woman, a cadaver from the waist up that she named Tracy, and had to smuggle into a convention. Jean once sneaked an entire dead body into a meeting room at the Fairmont. She said they dressed the dead man in a suit and mussed up his hair to make him look drunk. "Then we carried him in, supported by two sober doctors." She took a swallow of her scotch. "Only hard part was finding two sober doctors at the convention." June 30th. As I passed three teenage girls on the street yesterday, one was saying, "Don't you just hate it when you meet a guy, and he's got the personality you always dreamed about, but is ugly?" I swear I hate that shit. July 2nd. Before leaving for class this morning, I found out that I won another literary award. It's $1,000 for The New Music from the Illinois Arts Council, which gives the same amount to the magazine that the story was published in, ACM. This was the final day for claiming the prize, so I let my students go early and rushed out to get my money. I'm as shocked as I was the last time. The New Music was written 2 years ago, right after I graduated. July 7th. I finished the Jackson Pollock biography and started a new one about Hattie McDaniel, who played Mammy in Gone with the Wind and was married four times, once to a man named Wonderful Smith. July 12th. For the third time this week, a man approached me and asked if he could have a dollar. He pointed to a van and said that it was his. "It broke down, and if I don't get to work, I'm in big trouble." Every time it's a different guy, but it's always the same van. A scam, obviously. But even if the story was true, who goes to work with no money in his pocket? What if he ran out of gas? When I taught my night class in the Fine Arts Building, I was often asked for money by a woman who said she'd been robbed and needed to take a commuter train to one of the northern suburbs. Even the first time I saw her, I thought, "Really? You can't call a friend or a family member? You're honestly going to hit up total strangers for your fare?" Like the men with the van, she was always well-dressed and acting frantic. July 26th. Last night I read at the Park West as part of the Orchid Show, and it seemed pretty full to me, maybe 500 people. I'm hoping that a year from now I'm not regretting my decision to leave Chicago. It was always my dream to read in such a fancy place in front of such a big audience. Now I want a bigger audience, but in New York. One of the other acts last night performed a rap number with two other guys. Backstage, he'd hogged the dressing room and made a big deal out of having a manager. Then he got out there, and I saw that his fly was down. July 30th. I read in an interview that David Lynch used to go to Bob's Big Boy in Los Angeles. Every day for 7 years, he'd have a milkshake and 6 cups of coffee and take notes before going home to write. I sure will miss the IHOP when I move to New York. Every night, Barbara carries a menu to my table and says, "Just coffee this evening?" Every night, I cross my fingers as she hands me my change at the register. Every night, as I leave, she says, "Take care." The few times she hasn't said it, I've worried I'll get hit by a car while riding my bike home. At the IHOP, I go through phases of sitting in different booths. I can look at the one in the very back and think, "I remember those days." I recall sitting near the front where I could hear people on the payphone. Each phase lasts about 6 months. I always stay at the IHOP long enough to smoke 3 cigarettes. I never have 4. I love for things to stay exactly the same, but I can't have this IHOP and New York. July 31st. Again tonight on Addison, a man approached me and said that his van had broken down. "I need you to give me a quarter," he said, as if that's what it would cost to have the thing towed and repaired. August 7th. Today was my last day of teaching at the Art Institute. The summer school class was so sweet, one of the best. I brought my black and white Polaroid camera, and Ben stepped in from the office and took group photos, one for each person. Students read their stories out loud while we ate cake. We all said how much we liked one another. Seeing as I had my camera on me before leaving the IHOP tonight, I took a picture of Barbara, who has worked evenings on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays the entire 6.5 years I've been coming here. In the background of the photo I took are the rotisserie chickens, the ones what spin around. August 13th. As a going-away present, Amy gave me some sort of a paw. It's mounted on a thin slice of mahogany, and beside it, written in pencil, is